Lady Barberina by Henry James. Chapter 1. It is well known that there are few sights in the world more brilliant than the main avenues of Hyde Park of a fine afternoon in June. This was quite the opinion of two persons who, on a beautiful day at the beginning of that month 4 years ago, had established themselves under the great trees in a couple of iron chairs, the big ones with arms, for which, if I mistake not, you pay tuppence, and sat there with the slow procession of the drive behind them while their faces were turned to the more vivid agitation of the row. Lost in the multitude of observers, they belonged, superficially at least, to that class of persons who, wherever they may be, rank rather with the spectators than with the spectacle. They were quiet, simple, elderly, of aspect somewhat neutral. You would have liked them extremely, but would scarcely have noticed them. It is to them, obscure in all that shining host, that we must nevertheless give our attention. On which the reader is begged to have confidence. He is not asked to make vain concessions. It was indicated touchingly in the faces of our friends that they were growing old together, and were fond enough of each other's company not to object, since it was a condition, even to that. The reader will have guessed that they were husband and wife, and perhaps, while he is about it, will further have guessed that they were of that nationality for which Hyde Park, at the height of the season, is most completely illustrative. They were native aliens, so to speak, and people at once so initiated and so detached could only be Americans. This reflection, indeed, you would have made only after some delay, for it must be allowed that they bristled with none of those modern signs that carry out the tradition of the old indigenous war-paint and feathers. They had the American turn of mind, but that was very secret, and to your eye, if your eye had cared about it, they might have either been intimately British or more remotely foreign. It was as if they studied, for convenience, to be superficially colourless. Their colour was all in their talk. They were not in the least verdant. They were grey, rather, of monotonous hue. If they were interested in the riders, the horses, the walkers, the great exhibition of English wealth and health, beauty, luxury, and leisure, it was because all this referred itself to other impressions, because they had the key to almost everything that needed an answer, because, in a word, they were able to compare. They had not arrived, they had only returned, and recognition, much more than surprise, was expressed in their quiet eyes. Dexter Freer and his wife belonged, in fine, to that great company of Americans who are constantly passing through London. Enjoyers of a fortune of which, from any standpoint, the limits were plainly visible, they were unable to treat themselves to that commonest form of ease, the ease of living at home. They found it much more possible to economize at Dresden or Florence than at Buffalo or Minneapolis. The saving was greater, and the strain was less. From Dresden, from Florence, moreover, they constantly made excursions that wouldn't have been possible with an excess of territory, and it is even to be feared they practiced some eccentricities of thrift. They came to London to buy their portmanteaus, their toothbrushes, their writing-paper. They occasionally even recrossed the Atlantic westward to assure themselves that westward prices were still the same. They were eminently a social pair. Their interests were mainly personal. Their curiosity was so invidiously human that they were supposed to be too addicted to gossip, and they certainly kept up their acquaintance with the affairs of other people. They had friends in every country, in every town, and it was not their fault if people told them their secrets. Dexter Freer was a tall, lean man, with an interested eye and a nose that rather drooped than aspired, yet was salient withal. He brushed his hair, which was streaked with white, forward over his ears and into those locks represented in the portraits of clean-shaven gentlemen who flourished 50 years ago, and wore an old-fashioned neckcloth and gaiters. His wife, a small plump person, rather polished than naturally fresh, with a white face and hair still evenly black, smiled perpetually, but had never laughed since the death of a son whom she had lost 10 years after her.